badass Wisconsin woman, Mildred Fish Harnack. Mildred was born in Milwaukee in 1902. While studying and teaching at UW-Madison, she met a German student named Arvid Harnack and married him in 1926. How do you meet a guy named Arvid and not marry him? A few years later, they moved to Germany, where Mildred taught and worked towards her doctorate, and Arvid worked for the German government. 1930s German government. What could go wrong?
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. That was the first half of a TikTok I made during Women's History Month in 2021, which is March, which was the first time I actually learned anything about the story of Milwaukee native Mildred Fish Harnack. And today, September 16th, is actually Mildred Fish Harnack Day in Wisconsin. And so to talk more about her legacy, because the first half of that video does not get into the important parts of her story and what she sacrificed and the anti-fascist hero that she is. And so to talk more about her story and her legacy, we are joined by longtime activist for peace and justice and in Milwaukee, and is the president of the board of Milwaukee Turners, Art Heitzer, and Libby Ellsworth Cash, who is an American Studies scholar and turned attorney. Welcome to the show.
Thank you
for hosting.
Absolutely. And so I know how this story ends, but I would love to hear from either of you as far as a little bit more of the details and the different facts that led to this incredible woman's life.
I won't start with the end. So Mildred was a scholar, a West Sider. Lots of descriptions have her described as either German or Jewish. She was neither. She was English. But as your little preview said, when she went to UW-Madison, she met and married a German scholar from one of the blue-chip intellectual families of Germany. And then Hitler took over, and they, together with a few hundred other people, intellectuals, workers, etc., formed a resistance group right in the middle of the Third Reich. And they put on underground newspapers in multi-languages directed towards foreign workers and many other things. But also Arvid, her husband, was in the economics ministry, and he had access to the Nazi plans to break the detente, we'll call it, with the Soviet Union, and to invade instead, sent that information east. They also, Mildred had very close contacts with the U.S. Embassy and sent information on where German Nazi assets were being kept in the U.S. But ultimately, their group was exposed. It was, by the way, one of the outstanding groups in terms of leading roles for women in this resistance organization. But they were arrested and tried, and Arvid was executed, and Mildred was assigned to 6 years of hard labor. And at least Arvid thought she would survive the demise of the Nazis. At that point, they were losing on the Eastern Front. Hitler refused to accept that sentence and ordered her to be retried, and she was, and then was ordered to be beheaded, which happened in February 1943, I think, 44, in Berlin Plötzensee. And she's the only American, also the only American woman, but the only American civilian executed for being part of the German resistance to the Third Reich. That's the nutshell story.
That's the nutshell story. Go ahead, Libby.
So this happened, and Kristen, you understand what it's like to come across Mildred, her story, and to be like, what? So I grew up in Milwaukee, and then, I mean, I am curious to a fault. And I'm, you know, researching local history from the time I'm younger. I move abroad after college because I'm going to pursue a PhD. So I'm going to learn German so I could fight with dead German men. So I learn all of German. And while I'm there, My teachers, you know, will ask where I'm from when you practice your German, and I'll tell them Milwaukee, and they would bring up this woman. And I had Mildred Fish Harnack, and they told me to walk two blocks over. There was a school named after her. There was, she's everywhere. And I had no idea. And as someone from Milwaukee or Wisconsin, really in general, but especially Milwaukee, we're really sort of bringing up Milwaukee whenever we can. And so for me not to have that local angle was just, it was a Shonda. It was a great shame. And so I spent my time there sort of learning more about her and sort of learning about her as a person, because I really identified with her. And it scared me to death the fact that she could be erased from our cultural memory. There are so many instances where our lives have paralleled or overlapped or intersected that to keep someone like her buried and away from my imagination felt deliberate and felt like something that I needed to actively fix to make Mildred imaginable to other people and accessible. Because as Art and I will talk about, like, it's really important that we sort of, that we look at that time period, reflect on our own, look at our values, but sort of model the work and the work of Mildred Fish Harnack, but also the story of how her legacy was treated, because we don't want to repeat that.
And so what reason was there to bury this story? Because obviously we fought the Nazis in World War II, so you'd think that you would want to lift up a woman who was an anti-fascist, like the bravery of being part of the anti-Nazi resistance. And so why bury that story?
Well, it actually can be seen in part if you look in the file at the UW archives. So a commission was set up by the University of Wisconsin how to appropriately honor her. Helen C. White, after whom the general library is named, was head of the English department, and she was head of the committee. And then the last document in the file says the possibility of communist involvement could not be ruled out. And then there's nothing more in the file after that. So we had the McCarthy period. We had, you know, if you've seen the movie Judgment at Nuremberg, you see how the U.S. was trying to line up people, including Nazis, to be part of our side of the Cold War. And the Red Orchestra, which is what the Gestapo called this resistance group, the Harnack Schulze-Boysen organization is the historian's name for it, included communists, included socialists, included religious people, included workers, intellectuals, so anything, the broad brush that might be communist involved, you couldn't recognize that, and you had to run away from it. That was what the Cold War brought to us in the McCarthy period.
And I think to revisit sort of what it, so for me to identify with Mildred and go through sort of that time, I'm thinking, I'm in those archives, the UW archives, mm-hmm. and I'm reading upon her death sort of notices and any interviews that are taken with her colleagues or her mentors, and you just see sort of this misogyny and reduction of her politics, her ideology, her work itself as a translator, which is an art. I mean, she's got a body of work that people need to reexamine. Luckily, there's artists like Sean Mitha who are doing that right now. Her brain is completely reduced because, I mean, the truth is that she was an anti-fascist and a socialist and very interested in the communist project because of the women's equality that was central to that project of communism at the USSR at the time. And so because that was a model, because there was a model of that that was influencing the sort of ideas that she and her husband were having. In a McCarthy America, it's not going to happen. And so file closed. I believe she's referred to as a well-liked, very attractive woman. So she's sort of reduced to a sort of gentle, non-threatening sort of character and an ancillary character. Where in when you're in Germany, it couldn't be further from the case.
That's so incredible to me. So we have about 2 minutes before the first break, and we're going to keep you both through the break. But as far as the revival of her story, how did that come about? Because now we obviously have Mildred Fish Harnack Day.
Well, I found in a left-wing newspaper an article that said Mildred from Milwaukee, and it told her story in a nutshell, and it said someone should see that she's recognized in her home country. When President Reagan was going to Europe and laying a wreath at the SS soldiers in a cemetery called Bitburg, there was a lot of people in this country who did not think that was what the President of the United States should be doing and who he should be honoring SS soldiers. So I approached the members of the state legislature and said, why don't we, here's the story of Mildred Fish Harnack. Why don't we have a recognition day for her birthday? And that passed through, and that's how the day became. So it's supposed to be recognized throughout the schools of the state, although I would say actual practice is somewhat spotty.
Well, we're recognizing her today, and we're going to take a short break and then talk more about her legacy and why it's important for us to continue to learn about her and celebrate her. We are joined this half hour by Libby Ellsworth Cash and Art Heitzer, who are both prominent people when it comes to celebrating Mildred Fish Harnack. We'll take a break. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. This half hour, we are talking to longtime activist for peace and justice and president of the board of the Milwaukee Turners, Art Heitzer, and American scholar turned attorney Libby Ellsworth Cash about Mildred Fish Harnack, because September 16th, today, is Mildred Fish Harnack Day. And prior to the break, we talked about her story, her legacy, and how that was buried for a long time in Wisconsin. But due to the work of Art, we now have a public school holiday where we're supposed to remember and learn about Mildred Fish Harnack. But Libby, I think you and I are probably around the same age. I don't remember learning about her. And so what does that actually mean when we have these days of remembrance? And unless you're like me and checking Wisconsin Historical Societies on this day, you don't even have an idea of who this woman was and how much good she did in the world.
Well, unfortunately, it's not a self-enforcing law. On occasion, the Wisconsin Association of School Boards or DPI, Department of Public Instruction, puts out a pamphlet or a notice. There's a fair number of other days. It's not just noted. And sort of says, here are the days you're supposed to observe. But, you know, schools and teachers are under a lot of challenge. So, as I said, I don't think that the actual implementation of this is universal by any means. But in theory, today is supposed to be recognized in the schools throughout the state in her honor of her memory and her legacy.
And I think because of the absence of any sort of any sort of voice from state, either the federal or the actual state of Wisconsin or the local level, like the civic, the city or the county level, when I found out about this and Kismet brought me to arts and I was like, oh, there's a guy who did the thing, who gave us this day? Well, we're going to sell it. So I moved, when I moved back just to Wisconsin for law school, I was like, well, we're going to celebrate this woman. Like, we're going to throw a party. And so we started throwing birthday parties for her every year. And it was great because I was able to share that story with people, and that's how they learned about Mildred. And they were like, oh, wow, that's cool. And they were sort of able to participate. And I think that, like, word of mouth, it became a thing. And then all of a sudden, the next year, it was already being planned without me. Like, someone, they were just...
They left you behind.
Which is great. Which is great. Yeah. And then pandemic happened and stuff. But that last year, I just my friends at Light the Home did me a solid and allowed us to gratis light up the home in red in honor of Mildred. And I really don't believe that there has been any sort of huge public honoring of her in Milwaukee. That might have been the first in quite a long time. But either way, we had a great party, and it was great. We talked about Mildred, and we all sort of used it as an excuse to get together and build some solidarity. And I think that that's really important. And it's all because of the work that art did. And until the state of Wisconsin or the city of Milwaukee or some, I mean, until it's part of the curriculum, which I don't know if it ever would be, it ultimately begs the question, who is responsible for maintaining cultural memory and sort of the power over the power that cultural memory can have? Like, and the consequences of it.
Well, it's interesting because when I first learned her story, my first reaction, having an acting background, was, how is this not a movie yet? Because it's an incredible story that reads like a movie as far as both the tragedy of how it ended, but the struggle within it. And World War II movies are popular still. And so, I, you know, as far as what would it take, it may take one of you writing a script.
Well, luckily, Rebecca Donner, who is the great-great-niece of Mildred, has written a fabulous book that a lot of people have read, and hopefully that could be turned into something. But mm-hmm. I think also you have to think about what are the implications of having a World War II movie from a domestic studio that is showing a attractive, cool woman working with communists, you know? Like, I don't know. To show the collaboration that ultimately, like, let's not forget that Arvid and Mildred, their work was noting U.S. assets that were, I mean, Nazi assets that were kept in the United States. And so, I mean, are we comfortable with this history yet? Is really question.
That's a really good point. So in the few minutes that we have, what do you think, as far as whether it is or is not being taught, what is the legacy and why do we need to teach our young people about her story?
Well, I think it's important to see the example. She's certainly not the only one, but a prominent one, of reaching across cultural divides, building unity and seeing intolerance, racism, anti-Semitism, fascism, indeed, taking a stand, even at great personal risk and ultimate risk in this case, to be active and to be courageous and to build unity among people who are sensitive and concerned. And it can be done, but not always without a price.
And I think her legacy is really for us to ask the question, how many more Mildreds might there have been? And how many are among us today? And a local artist, Tyrone Randall Jr., he located George Marshall Park's unmarked grave in Folsom Cemetery, which is where Milwaukee's only documented lynching took place, and only 2021 did they put it on a headstone. So I think that it's Mildred's legacy forces us to make sure there are no more erasures from our local history and cultural memory.
Absolutely. And so, give the name of Rebecca's book one more time for people who would like to read the book, because it is a New York Times bestseller.
The book is called, it's a kind of an odd title, All the Frequent Troubles of Our Days.
All right, so that is the book about Mildred Fish Harnack. Please check it out. There's more information about her online. Thank you so much for joining us today, Libby and Art. We honor her. Thank you so much for joining us. All right, this is As Goes Wisconsin. We'll take a quick break. Yeah.